New churches are scary things. New churches occasionally make the news. Sometimes for good things and sometimes for less than good things. We argue about projectors and screens and music types and young people and old people and robes and stoles and suit jackets and blue jeans. Are they really doing it right in these new churches? Wouldn't it be horrible if that happened here? Now, this passage is about a new church. It's about a new church that is no longer in business, so to speak. You can't go worship at First Church of Thessalonica. It's not there. And it's an interesting story because Paul and Silas come to town, and we know that Paul's Paul. He likes to stir the pot. So he goes to the synagogue where the Jews meet every week for three consecutive Sabbaths, and he works to convert the Jews to the message of Jesus as the Messiah. And he is perhaps, as the text describes it, less successful with the Jews in Thessalonica than he is with the Greeks and with the women. He does have the attention of the Jews. He has their full and undivided attention such that they go get a crowd to run him out of town. Now, they never catch Paul. But his welcome after a couple weeks is perhaps the welcome of the new pastor who says, you should throw out the pews and stop playing the organ, and let's get a drum set and some guitars. Now, we know that would never happen in a real church today, right? We know nobody'd ever get run out of town for something like that, right? The people in Thessalonica who don't like what Paul is saying and what Paul and Silas are doing, they manage to get into the house where they've been staying. They take Jason and drag him before the authorities, and by now, that should sound familiar. There's somebody else who had a meal interrupted, the room he was in broken into, and drug off before the authorities. You should know that story after these last couple months. And the complaint should sound familiar too, because the complaint is twofold. One, that these people, the ones we don't have in front of you, we're just complaining about the people they stayed with, are turning everything upside down. And they're talking about a king other than Caesar. Do those charges sound familiar to anyone? Now, before we get going too fast, let's unpack those for just a second. One, what else are you going to say about a Messiah who won't stay dead? What else are you going to say about a Messiah who uses Samaritans as a teaching tool and a good example? What else are you going to say about a Messiah who actually deals with women, who labors on the Sabbath, who touches lepers? You want somebody who's going to just go along and comply with the rules as written? Jesus is not your guy. There's a second piece to this that we often gloss over. We're perfectly happy to look at Jesus turning things upside down, and we're thankful he's turned them upside down, and he did it once, and he doesn't need to touch it now, ever again, right? The The second part of this charge, the charge that gets a sign put on Jesus' cross that says this one is King of the Jews. That's the dangerous part of this conversation, because that's the part that says there's somebody other than Rome you have to listen to. There's a power above Rome. There's a power over the people who have the military, and a power above the people who do the taxes. There's a power bigger than Caesar. That's the unsettling part of this story. So, the church gets started. This is what starts the church. This is what starts the church. Is a proclamation of turning the world upside down and a king other than Caesar. It's a terrifying thought, isn't it? I mean, churches are supposed to be formed decently and in order, and as good Presbyterians, we need to form a committee to study whether we need another committee to start a church. And maybe that we'll need to do a committee about who's going to bring what to the committee meeting. I'll ask you the same question I asked the kids. How does it turn out? Paul writes a bunch of letters to a bunch of churches. Some are complimentary. Some are not. Before we get to that, as you ponder that, the question I would ask you is, when did you need your world turned upside down? Okay? If we were one of those churches with screens, I would have a slideshow right here. The first slide for some of the generation here would be a convertible with a lady in pink scrambling over the back seat. Things were turned upside down that day. For my generation, it would be a blue sky and a white contrail leading up to an explosion. And just older than my kids, it would be two towers billowing smoke against a blue sky. Right? Those are days things got turned upside down. So let me give you slightly more positive turned upside downs. You remember holding your child the day they were born? Do you remember, as all of you tell me is even better, holding your grandchildren? Remember exchanging vows? You remember holding hands with somebody you love for the very last time? Those days turn things upside down. Do they not? So when was the first day the gospel turned things upside down for you? And to go along with that, when was the first day you knew that you needed more power than they had in the White House? I mean, it's real common these days, but you know, when was the first time? You remember you needed more power than City Hall had, or than Mom and Dad had? The first time you didn't know anybody who could fix it and make it right? That's really what is at the heart of starting the church in Thessalonica. That's what's at the heart of starting the church. Those two encounters. I need more than anyone here can do. And nothing is as it is supposed to be. Nothing is as I knew it was. Now, we often talk about relationships that start in stressful situations as disintegrating and falling apart and kind of being useless. Do you hear what Paul says to the church at Thessalonica? Paul is not normally a praise-effusive writer. We give thanks to God for you, for your witness, for your welcome, for how you have survived persecution, for your ongoing witness, that people talk about you in a good way. People talk about you and your faith, not just in Thessalonica, but in Macedonia, in Achaia. Everywhere we go, people talk about you. Not bad for starting off with the authorities chasing you down, trying to arrest you, right? Is that what people might say about us? I mean, do they talk about us all the way to Creole Springs? That's one of the challenges for the church is almost all of our churches start to some degree with the chaos outlined here in Acts. Corinth's church will start with this chaos in next week's reading. We are named the First Presbyterian Church. I have to tell you, we were not the First Presbyterian Church in Marion. There were two previous to us. Shed Church, also known as Mount Pisgah. Mount Pleasant. And there was a Cumberland Presbyterian Church out towards Pittsburgh, founded before that. Hey, we're still First Presbyterian in our minds, right? Have been for 109 years now, so it must be true. How do people talk about us? There's this encounter that Max Martini had in Malawi. And he's out doing wells. You know, he's in a t-shirt, he's in a ball cap, he's in rather orange dust-stained khakis, because all your khakis get orange dust-stained after a certain amount of time. And people ask him where he is from. And he says, I'm from Marion. And they didn't realize that Marion was a place. It was just the name of Marion Medical Mission. And when they found out he was from Marion, everything changed. 3 weeks earlier, I had stood in worship at Chisimia Prayer House, which you guys have supported since about 1992. And Tom got up to introduce me. There is nothing that will make you more fearful than having Tom Logan do your introduction. Tom stood up. He'd been coming to Africa since 1965. Yada, yada, yada. Wells, impossible, impossible, impossible. Right, we know Tom's spiel. And this is the first time my pastor has come to Africa with me. Those friends are the moments. Because guess what? They know this church. Maybe not in Macedonia and Achaia, but they know it in Mbengwini Province, Malawi, and Chizimia. And they know it in Chitipa, and Karonga, and in Koma, and in Zambia, and in Tanzania. Christ's church starts out of turmoil, out of upset, out of not doing things the right way, turning them upside down. And then what? That's really the question for us, is, and then what? Now that you know, and if you've heard Tom do a minute for mission before, you know that there is a power higher than the border guards between any African nations, because Tom will smuggle whatever he needs across those lines. You know that there are things mom and dad cannot fix. You know that there are wounds that time does not heal. And in the end of all that, you need something bigger than that. I need something bigger than that. So we get to a God who is bigger than Rome and bigger than Caesar and who turns everything on its head. Down the road, what are we? The church born out of that chaos and turmoil. What are we? Next week's story does not end as happily. Corinth doesn't get a gold star from Paul. Are we a church that they hear from in Macedonia, in Achaia, in Klaipeda, Lithuania, in China, in Malawi, in Tanzania, in Zambia, in border towns between here and Mexico, in our own neighborhood? Out of that chaos, out of that realization, out of being turned upside down and finding something more, what will we be next? To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen. Friends, I invite you to join with me as we say what it is that we believe using the words of the Apostles' Creed.